passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We are very, very happy to be bringing back our Scout Series podcast this year, where we talk to an area scout who signed a player who made his major league debut during the current season. To kick off the 2021 edition of our Scout Series podcast, we're very, very pleased to be joined by Kenny Munoz, the Royals Four Corners area scout. Munoz was the scout who signed Kyle Isbell. Isbell made his major league debut this year, made the Royals opening day roster, really just an impressive young prospect for a couple years now, was a third round selection in 2018 out of UNLV, climbed his way to the major leagues, made the opening day roster, and got an RBI single in his first major league at bat against the Rangers' Kyle Gibson. Big moment for Kyle, a big moment for Kenny. And Kenny also has a pretty interesting backstory. He was an infielder at George Mason University in the early 90s, where his teammates included current Royals scouting director Lonnie Goldberg, current Royals assistant GM J.J. Piccolo, and an assistant coach for that George Mason team was current Royals GM Dayton Moore. So the four of them go back more than 20 years, almost 30 now, and they've all come back together in the Royals organization. They were all there when the Royals won the American League pennant in 2014. They all won World Series rings together when the Royals in 2015. And now Kenny was able to sign a player who projects to be a big part of the Royals' future moving forward. We're happy to have Kenny join us today from Las Cruces, New Mexico, where he's scouting the next wave of potential Royals talent. Kenny, I know it's obviously thrilling to see one of the guys you drafted make the major leagues. When Kyle Isbell made the opening day roster this year, just what was that feeling like for you, seeing him get the call?
It was obviously very special for a lot of reasons. One, it was the first player that I had my name attached to that has made it. So that was special. And then with it being Kyle, it took it to another level because Kyle was he was a special player, but he was also just such an awesome kid to get to know through the draft process, and with Coach Stulte down at UNLV giving plenty of access and allowing me to meet with Kyle and get to know Kyle, and the input and feedback getting from the coaching staff there was also very helpful. So to see him make it, and I was watching the box scores and seeing his name in there, at the end of spring training, but to see that final, for real, it was really special.
Yeah, and your first one, I know so many scouts talk about, it's just such a hustle and such a grind, and a lot of times that's the reward. I mean, for it to be the first one, just what was that emotion like, even beyond just, happiness?
The thing of it is like, I have a lot of friends, obviously, that scout, and you get to know guys and other guys that I like and know and respect and I'm friends with have had big leaguers, and some of them multiple big leaguers. And to experience and understand the feeling that they had, for me to have that, I mean, when I watched Kyle's first big league at bat, and it was like just something churning inside of me. It was just crazy. I was probably more nervous than he was, and to see him, and then for him to have success and get an RBI single, and it was just such a cool experience for me. That's something I'll never forget.
Absolutely. And the road to this experience started almost 30 years ago. I want to go back to the early 90s at George Mason University. You were a player there, as was current assistant GM J.J. Piccolo, current general manager Dayton Moore, and current scouting director Lonnie Goldberg. Actually, I should say Dayton Moore was an assistant coach at the time. You, Lonnie, and J.J. were all teammates. The first question I have to ask you is, what was Coach Dayton Moore like?
Coach Dayton Moore was obviously a great baseball mind, and he was very intense, and he demanded a lot from us, and made all of us better players and better people. And so everything that we did, was for a purpose, and Lonnie and I in particular benefited from, Dayton being a former middle infielder and us being middle infielders, and Dayton taking that special interest in us and making sure that we were, gonna be, the best players we could be, not only for the program, but obviously for ourselves and moving forward.
You mentioned he could be kind of intense. What's your best Coach Dayton Moore story?
Oh boy. Now you're throwing me on the spot. I remember, but I mean, there's a lot of different things that that Dayton would do. I mean, he took a special interest in Lonnie and I, and I remember there were some times where we would do some just drills and things off, like Lonnie and I with Dayton, where he worked us really hard, and it was awesome because it taught me a lot about work ethic and what it really takes to get to where I want to be, and how it's, things aren't going to be just given to me. And if I want to be good and I want to have success, I've got to put the work in. And he oversaw that and instilled that. There's probably some funny things that I could come up with, but I'll keep it pretty simple right now.
Sounds good. You mentioned you and Lonnie were middle infielders together. Yeah. What was your relationship like with Lonnie and JJ as well, being a teammate of yours?
Yeah. So Lonnie and I were obviously very close during our playing days, and with him being at second and me being at short, and we always knew where each other was. And it's funny. We had this play where we do, like, and I'm surprised a lot of middle infielders don't use this more often, where the second baseman's going away from first up the middle, and it's a really difficult throw, and instead of trying to plant or jump throw, he would just flip me the ball and I would throw it across to first. And so it was funny, I sent him a text recently because I saw that in a high school game and I was blown away, because I haven't seen that in decades, and I wonder why big leaguers don't do it, and why more college and high school players don't do it. And I texted him and said, "Hey man, I just saw our play." And so he's texted back and said, "Yeah," he's like, "It's funny. I hadn't seen it in a long time either." And he saw it at a high school game as well. So yeah, it was an awesome experience with the two of us there. And then JJ was he and I were summer teammates, and he had mentioned he was interested in transferring. He was at NC State and he was going to leave. And then we had lost our catcher. We lost Squidger to the draft, and then I think something happened with whoever we had coming in, and we were shorthanded. I said, "Hey, I just played with this guy who's good, and he's looking for a place." And everything happened so fast. Before we knew it, JJ was down in Fairfax on a visit, and it was me, him, and our assistant at the time, Mike Wallace, at lunch, and trying to talk JJ into coming to Mason.
Hey, and it worked out. The one year that all four of you guys were all there together, 1993, you guys led George Mason to the first at-large bid in school history to the NCAA tournament. Really a tremendous run of success the years you guys were all there. How much do you guys carry that with you? And obviously the fact you've all had success with the Royals too. I mean, it's kind of an amazing stretch from the early 90s at George Mason, getting to the NCAA tournament, to you were all there, part of the staff when they won the World Series in 2015.
Yeah, that was amazing, because we had no idea that we would get an at-large bid. We hoped, and we are actually, the whole team got together and we watched the selection show on ESPN, and we were literally the last team announced, and it was Arizona State, and it said the West Regional, and they went through the regional and described it, and then he said, and from the Colonial, and then the whole place just erupted. We were going wild and hugging, and we went right to the field house, and before you know it, we were getting ourselves ready to come out to Arizona, which is ironic because I had never, prior to taking my four corner job with the Royals, I got hired in 2006, but I had never been to Arizona other than that regional. And I remember it being just so darn hot that I didn't know, I mean, we couldn't breathe. I mean, just getting out to work out that first day, I think our cleats and spikes and shoes were melting on the ground. It was so awful. And then when the Royals had a four corner position, they said, hey, I got wind of it through JJ actually, and he mentioned the four corners, and my first question was, what are the four corners? So I had to get up to speed on what that meant, and it meant moving to Arizona, and I had the, you know, I had wanted to scout for a while, but it never worked itself out until everything just came together. JJ gave my name to Derek Ladanier, who was the director at the time, and I did an interview with him in November, and it went well, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah, you guys were all together at George Mason. Then you all kind of went your separate ways. I saw you played a little bit of independent ball, and I read that you were a teacher immediately after playing.
Yeah, I did. When I realized that hitting was difficult, it was time to start life. And I basically walked into a teaching position in Fairfax County. I taught in Fairfax County Public Schools for the better part of 12 years, and I stayed in coaching. I stayed involved. I kept in touch with JJ. I actually had a prospect, a left-handed pitcher at my school, and JJ and I would stay in touch about him because JJ was scouting with Atlanta at the time. And scouting was always something that I wanted to do, but it just felt like, man, I don't know this is ever going to happen, you know? It finally, the planets aligned, and JJ was actually he was the reason I helped as an extra coach in Rome, Georgia in the summer of 2006, because I had the summers off and I was teaching. And so the experience of being around such unbelievable players, like that league, it was loaded in 2006. I mean, Elvis Andrews was our shortstop. And then you went around the league and there were players like Andrew McCutchen and all these just really, really quality big leaguers. And so when it came time to interview, I was able to speak about not only the tools and the talent I was seeing, but I was able to talk on how important makeup is, because we had, you know, obviously being in a clubhouse, that's when you really get to know and learn the players' makeup and get a full understanding of who the players really are.
Absolutely. What were you doing in Rome? What were you coaching?
Yeah, so I was just an extra coach. I would throw BP and hit fungos and help out with the infielders and really whatever else they needed. And it was funny. I was telling my dad this story the other day. I was throwing to one of our players in the cage, and I actually hit him in the head. And
that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. So then we were on the game field pregame BP. Elvis was up and I threw one behind him and mentally it was starting to happen. Like I was starting to lose it. I never thought about throwing a baseball in my life. And it was like, where's my hand and where's my release and all this crazy thoughts. And so I threw him behind Elvis, and Elvis was such a great kid that he just laughed and everyone thought it was a joke that I was messing around, but I wasn't. So I literally had to step back off the platform, take a deep breath, because if I hit Elvis Andrews in the head at that point, I probably would have got fired from the platform.
Luckily for everyone involved, that did not happen.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, you had been away from the game. You mentioned you were coaching at your school, but obviously the pro game had changed a lot from the early 90s to 2006 or so. Was there a little bit of like a recalibration in your head you had to do? Just like, okay, this is how the game has changed.
Yeah, I didn't really see it that way. I mean, I did scout school with the Braves in the 90s. So I was taught on the grading scale and how it all worked. And the grading scale and the evaluation, that part, that's the part of evaluating the players and the tools, that really didn't change. I think the major changes are more so in the last few years with, you know, exit velocity and all those types of stats and launch angle and spin rate and essentially pitchers trying to find velocity these days. That really wasn't a thing back then. So I didn't really see it as a huge change. And it was, you know, something where I was always involved in the game and stuck around the game. So I didn't really see a huge change in from when I was coaching and playing to when I got started in 2006 in scouting.
What subject did you teach?
I was a gym teacher, PE, but I did dabble a little bit in some classroom driver's ed, and it was actually, you know, it was something I guess I had to do, and it was a good experience for me. I got the head baseball coach at West Springfield after a longtime legend, Ron Tugwell, retired. I was fortunate enough to be the head coach there, and I learned a lot of things about myself and about interacting with players and people, and you know, it was definitely a learning experience, and I ended up, you know, going and helping back at Mason as a coach after a stint at West Springfield. So I stayed around the game. I stayed around, you know, baseball at a pretty good level, and then that 2006 summer was huge in both in my development as a coach and a scout, I think.
You mentioned you stayed around the game. Obviously, the passion never left. At the same time, teaching is a job with some stability, and we all know scouting cannot be at times. Was it a difficult decision for you to leave a stable, steady, full-time position and jump into the scouting world?
No. Okay. It's crazy. I thought about this. I mean, if I would have stayed in teaching, I'd be close to being able to retire. And I gave all of that up for, you know, to do what my, you know, what I've always wanted to do. My passion is baseball and always has been, always will be. And I feel like I would have cheated myself had I not, you know, gone for that, you know, for taking that opportunity, you know. But it was when Derek and Stevie Williams, they interviewed me, and we were, you know, we got through the interview and they said, well, you know, we're going to offer you the job. And they laid out the terms and they said, you know, we're going to give you a week to think about it. And if you could let us know, the sooner the better. And I'm like, I don't need a week. I'm good. Let's go. And they're like, awesome. And I started, you know, filling out paperwork and all that good stuff. And so I obviously stability wise, that would have been the safe play, but I think I probably would have regretted it the rest of my life had I not gone for what I really wanted to do.
So we only get one life to live. Might as well take a shot, right?
Absolutely.
So you're with the Royals, 2014 rolls around, you guys make the World Series, get to game 7, obviously a tough, tough loss there with the tying run on third base. But you guys get back in 2015 and win it all. What was that like for you being a part of the organization, especially with your history with Lonnie, Dayton, and JJ, you know, being able to be a part of a World Series champion and get rings together?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it just made it all the more special. One, because slowly but surely we all ended up at Kansas City in the same place. But, you know, when I started in 2007, we were losing a lot, you know, and that wasn't any fun. You know, going to a ballpark and hearing another scout just, you know, make a little snide remark or something about how bad we are. And I'm just really, I mean, and we all are very competitive people, and none of us, you know, see that as acceptable. So it's what do I have to do on my end? How am I going to help? You know, it, whatever way possible. And it's being the best, you know, four corner scout I can be to help make sure that we're covered out here and we're scouting the right players and possibly drafting and signing the right players. So if to finally win it, it was surreal. It was just another really cool moment, you know, along the lines of the, you know, watching Isbell in his first at bat. And it just to go from losing a lot, you know, way more than winning to, and I've always, I seem to have been on successful teams and won championships and won, you know, in high school and college And it, you know, it was hard to go through that. And then, like you said, like 2014 and 15 to get to the highest level, and one, get close, and then two, to finally finish the job. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of times people talk about, oh, we're going to go into the 4-year rebuild and the tank now, and it's part of the plan. But what a lot of people don't realize is how painful it is for a lot of the people who work for the team. I mean, 4 consecutive years or 3 consecutive years, or in your guys' case, it was even longer, of just lots and lots and lots of 90 lost seasons. It hurts. It's hard to be a part of. And I keep hearing that a lot. I think from the outside looking in, people say, oh, 3-4 year rebuild will be over and we'll win. But when you're physically in the weeds, it's tough.
No, it's very tough. And you read things, you see, you know, whether it's social media or articles written, and it's frustrating. I mean, there's not much that we can do. And I mean, it's a hard time for everyone. I mean, there's us out in the field, we're looking for the next players. And then we have our player development people who are, you know, developing our talent and trying to get those guys, you know, ready to help us at the big league level as quickly as they can. And we're all tugging on the same rope. And yeah, when it finally comes together, it's awesome. But yeah, you're right. It's a very, very difficult and painful thing to go through.
Absolutely. Well, the ring was obviously a biggie, and then Kyle Isbell becoming your first big leaguer to make it. I want to go back to Kyle. You guys drafted him in the third round in 2018. When was the first time you saw Kyle Isbell?
Well, just, you know, in 2016, he was a freshman there, and I remember our Southern California area scout just mentioning his name. Just, you know, and we do that when a player leaves your area, goes to someone else. He's, hey, you know, keep your eye on this guy, and he started off, and he was playing some infield and playing outfield and kind of bouncing around. And, you know, he caught my eye as a speed player, as an athletic player, and a kid who was very tough. And honestly, it was more so what he did, his junior year. I mean, his sophomore year, he kind of, his average took a little bit of a hit, and he had more strikeouts than walks. You know, it was a little higher than you'd like. Especially the way we look at those numbers now. He was also a guy that was asked to be a run producer for that club. And he did that. He did everything his junior year, his draft year. And you saw the power, you saw the speed. He's stealing bases with excellent run times, and he's covering ground in the outfield. And I saw him as a fit for us, and that whether or not he's a center fielder in Kauffman Stadium, he's a fit for us because he's a speed player that can cover and play all three spots for us and give us flexibility while providing some offense for us as well.
Yeah, I remember when he was coming out of the draft, a couple people talked about they could see him playing second base, they could see him playing the outfield. How much did you consider him a potential part-time infielder as well, or was it strictly outfield in your evaluation?
Well, we looked at that. I mean, it was similar. We did that with Kipnis. It was a similar deal. Kipnis was center fielder at ASU, and we all were like, okay, let's see what it looks like at second. And it was a major conversion. And there were some times where Coach Stulte would set up a little early work and say, okay, Kyle's going to take some ground balls at second. I think it was, and even at our workout, you know, Kyle worked out in some in the infield. I think what it did was just, you know, make us, you know, look at what's the potential. Can he do this? You know, I think he actually could. He could have done it, but I think his value in what he does and what he brings in the outfield, it just ended up passing what he possibly would be as an infielder, and made it, I think, an easy solution for them when he went out and started running balls down out there. And I don't know what they saw, but I assume that they probably saw a lot of what I saw when he would, you know, play outfield and cover ground out there with his instincts and speed and intelligence. He's going to be a heck of an outfielder. Let's just not mess around with this infield thing anymore.
And in terms of him offensively, you mentioned he had been kind of an average speed guy. His junior year, he jumped to 14 home runs. It was the first time in his career he'd hit double-digit home runs. His slugging percentage jumped almost 200 points. So on the one hand, the power spike is something that's always nice to see. But at UNLV, you're playing at elevation, the ball flies there, and he's playing a lot of road games in places where the ball flies as well, New Mexico, Air Force, et cetera, in the Mountain West. In his case, how did you kind of differentiate between, okay, how much of this is real versus how much of this is environment-based?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We deal with that, you know, obviously in the four corners that I know now. It's Albuquerque and these other places you mentioned, Colorado. I mean, the ball obviously travels. It even travels in Arizona, and you see that at spring training. But with Kyle, I mean, you looked at the swing and you looked at the strength and you looked at the leverage and the natural loft that he was able to create, and it was natural and real. It wasn't something that was a product of the environment. And it looked like because he's able to hit balls hard and square balls up down the road, those are going to turn into balls that are going to be going out of any stadium in the big leagues. Not only, you know, just at, you know, the park at UNLV or in the Mountain West or wherever.
Draft day comes around. Now, this was the 2018 draft where the Royals took pitchers, college pitchers, with their first five picks. Four of the top 40 picks, they went Brady Singer, Jackson Coar, Daniel Lynch, Chris Bubich, picked Jonathan Bolin in the second round. Kyle Isbell was the first position player taken in this draft. What was the discussion like with you and the higher-ups about, hey, now that we're ready to pivot to a position player, this is the one we want?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm at home. I'm in my own little war room, if you will, just kind of waiting for the phone to ring and or a text or, you know, double check on this or what have you. So I wasn't in any kind of discussions. So I knew that there was interest in Kyle. And I saw what we had done, at the top of the draft. And so you knew a position player was coming. I actually thought Kyle was gone. I thought he was going to be taken, you know, before that. And when he was still there, I think we were all pleasantly surprised. And I know it's, you know, Lonnie was interested and a lot of our other people, Danny O and some other people were interested in liking, Kyle and what he could bring for us. And so it just became hey, this guy's still here. Let's go ahead and get this done.
In the lead up to the draft, how many people got a look at him? Because I know first rounders, obviously lots and lots and lots of different people come in. Some of the later round picks, it's more the area scout, maybe his cross checker. For a third round type of guy, how many different guys came in to get a look at him?
Yeah, I'm pretty much everybody saw him as far as I know. All the people that needed to. And again, the third round is still that's still a really good pick. It's still a high pick. And he also came and worked out for us. And they got to not only watch him work out, see him in person, but also interact with him. Which when you're around Kyle, you see instantly and you learn instantly what a special person he is, in addition to the talent that he has.
I know in some cases the area scout's the guy who makes the call telling the kid that he got picked. Did you get to call Kyle and tell him that he was the selection?
No, I didn't. It just depends. And sometimes it works out that way. And that one, it didn't. It's a lot of times it's right afterwards. I guess you have to make sure that no one else is going to take, you know, the player obviously picked your pocket, but right afterwards it's, hey, welcome to the Royals, and breathe a sigh of relief, like, holy smokes, I can't believe we got this guy, and let's get him signed and get going. So
he signed pretty quickly, went out to his pro debut, made it up to low class A Lexington and did some good things there. It was a very, very nice pro debut. How much do you follow the guys? Because I know a lot of times you guys are very, very busy. One draft cycle's over, you jump right into the next one with showcase season. You're back on the road a lot. How much were you tracking Kyle's progress those first minor league seasons?
Yeah, we're never too busy for that. We always track. We want to see what's going on with them, how they're doing. If there are struggles, do we need to reach out and, you know, just make sure that they know that, you know, not only do they have the support of the player development staff, but also, you know, the person that helped, you know, bring them into the organization is still watching and still cares and always will, and just make sure that they're okay. And so I was just, you know, would check in on Kyle. And I don't like to, you know, mess with kids too much, mess with them, you know, text them and bother them. I mean, this is their career and they need to get going, but I am available. And I always tell them I'm always here. You can call me, you can text me, whatever's easier. You want events, you want to, whatever it is you need, you know, I'm here for that. And I'll let them go. And, you know, obviously when Kyle makes it, you know, that's, you know, a phone call that gets made and you chat and you get to, you know, experience that with them as well. So yeah, I can't speak for everybody, but I would imagine that pretty much every scout is going to follow the guys that they sign, you know, fairly closely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely been the feedback we've gotten for many, many years. It's only natural. You mentioned reaching out to guys when things are difficult. Kyle had a pretty rough 2019 season. He had a hamstring injury followed by a Hammond injury, just really struggled with his health and never quite got into a rhythm and had a pretty rough go in 2019. How much did you talk to him during that season?
I mean, not a lot. It was just more just checking in, you know, how you holding up? Are you okay? I know his agent well, and his, you know, we talk, and he would, you know, also, you know, relay to me what's going on. Cause again, like, there's that line, you don't want to cross it. You don't want to be that over, I don't want to be that overbearing person to, you know, be a nuisance, but I also just want him to know that I do care. I do know what he's going through. I'm here if he needs him. I'll shoot him a text here and there, pick him up, you know, I couldn't tell you exactly, you know, how many times or what the interactions were like, but I do know it was pretty much just, hey man, hang in there. You're going to be back. You're going to get through this, you know, just really being as a source of support within the organization for him outside of player development.
Yeah, I did have a very, very nice bounce back in the Arizona Fall League, hit 315. I remember talking to some people in the Fall League that year. I was out there that year, but I did not get to see him just the way schedules lined up. And he was someone a lot of people said, hey, you know, he had a rough year, but there's real talent here. I know he was someone that we at BA obviously had on our radar and had him as a top 10 Royals prospect anyway. But remember that Fall League is when it seemed like things really started to turn for him. It's like, okay, this is what this guy can do when healthy against a lot of the very best prospects in the minors.
Yeah. And living in Arizona, which is part of the Four Corners, I know. it was cool that they had the Fall League, which I was able to watch and go out and see him. And I was asked to do some talk. It was about scouting, and it was done before the All-Star game. And so I did that, and Kyle's in the All-Star game. And so I was able to get the lineup and watch BP and watch the game and be there for all of that. And it was really cool just to, you know, have that opportunity. And I'm lucky that I am in Arizona for that reason, because I was able to see, you know, that special moment for him, and, you know, it's kind of springboard, if you will. I mean, into him making it to the big leagues. I mean, he, like you mentioned, had those struggles, and all of a sudden he establishes himself as one of our best prospects and one of the best prospects in baseball as a, you know, that third rounder from UNLV that, you know, just won't go away. You know, he had some injuries, but man, this guy's back. And then all of a sudden you look up, he's an all-star in the Fall League. And he does really well at our alternate site last year after all the craziness, and he's competing at a really high level and getting the attention of a lot of people. And so it's just a testament to Kyle and the type of person and the type of work ethic he has.
Yeah, you hit on this earlier, but he makes the opening day roster, which is obviously an incredible accomplishment. First at bat, opening day, goes up with the bases loaded, facing Kyle Gibson, a veteran big leaguer. Were you just hanging on every pitch? I mean, what was that like for you?
Absolutely. I mean, literally hanging on every pitch. And it was so cool to see, just to see that when that ball fell. I mean, it was just such a neat experience. And then you fast forward to a couple of games later, I'm watching on probably on my phone, and he's facing Bieber, who is absolutely filthy, and Bieber had got him a couple of times already. And it's late in the game, and Kyle just takes an unbelievable at bat and ends up drawing a walk. And it was probably one of the most productive walks you can have, because you got a young player facing a Cy Young caliber pitcher, and not a caliber, a Cy Young pitcher, that that is as good as there is in the game. And Kyle didn't bat an eye. He competed for the at-bat and ended up drawing a walk, where I think there's a lot of veteran hitters who probably would have struggled in that situation. But yeah, he's like I said, it's been really, really cool just to see him, get going.
Yeah, I feel like that's always been, I shouldn't say always, for the majority of Kyle Isbell's career, that was the thing with him. Really, really good strike zone discipline. His junior year at UNLV, 34 walks, 43 strikeouts. We mentioned that fall league stint, it was 14 walks, 20 strikeouts. He always kept it pretty tight, and it seemed like that was a big reason why the Royals, who admittedly did have some on-base problems last year, that was one of the things that made him very appealing for the opening day roster.
Yeah, I could see that. I'd get reports back like, man, Isbell's doing really well. He's looking really good. But to see it, in spring training that, and he's in the big league games and he's showing those types of at-bats, those competitive at-bats, and he's getting hits and he's driving balls and hitting home runs and doing all the things that our people have been seeing. So it was – pretty remarkable for a kid out of the 2018 draft, to not only get himself in the discussion, but to get himself on the opening day roster. That's pretty special.
No doubt. How would you say Kyle Isbell has changed from when you first saw him at UNLV or even from that 2018 season to now?
He's probably a little stronger. That's about it. As a person, he hasn't changed a lick, and he's not going to. He's just a really amazing, just down-to-earth, regular person, and he's not going to change. I mean, it doesn't matter whether he's, multiple-year All-Star, Hall of Famer. I mean, he's going to be the same person. He's just, and that's what's special about him, and that's why he's where he is now. So he hasn't changed at all that way. I think he's gotten himself, stronger, and he has that, that confidence instilled in him that he knows he belongs. It's just a matter of him having the opportunity. And once he has it, he's going to seize it. And he did.
You mentioned your experience with Rome in 2006 really drilled home the importance of makeup. And obviously makeup is a huge part of your job as an area scout, assessing these amateurs, their makeup. When did you first get the sense that Kyle was different or special or had the makeup to succeed?
Well, definitely through the course of his draft season, but he started to get my attention somewhat during the season before. The grit and the how he played, I mean, he was – and it's funny to hear, I think one of our players, it may have been Hunter Dozier, who said that he's like a mini Alex Gordon. And that's kind of what I saw. It was him, uniform's always dirty. He's laying out in the gap, making catches, making plays. He'll steal a base. He's doing whatever's necessary for the team to win that day. So that's really one of the many things that stood out with Kyle.
Absolutely. So I have to ask, that first hit, did you pump your fist? Did you let out a yelp? Like what was the physical reaction?
Yeah, I watched it at home and I was on my couch and jumped up and it was an aggressive fist bump. So if I had a football, it would have been a spike.
Nice.
It was pretty cool. It was really awesome. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, one of the things that always stands out to me is it feels like for the scouts, it's kind of a proud dad moment. Obviously, these aren't your flesh and blood, but in some ways, you've seen these kids grow up and grow as ball players, and it seems like that bond is in some ways kind of like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I saw other people go through it, and I couldn't relate because I never experienced it. So I was starting to feel like, well, the draft is a lottery and, maybe I'll get lucky enough one day to get somebody and all that. And to see Kyle make it and to feel and experience what other people have experienced. I mean, it's something really cool that, like I said, I was starting to wonder, man, this is a year, it's been a while, let's just say it's been a long time. And I, was just starting to wonder, man, who's gonna you know, be the one to break through and make it, and Kyle was the one.
Well, congratulations. It's well deserved, and we're happy for you. And obviously it's great to see Kyle have the success he has, and we wish you both all the success moving forward.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And there you have it, folks. That was Kenny Munoz, the Royals Four Corners Area Scout. Just great interview. So many great stories. And just see quite the career in baseball, from playing to teaching, but staying around the game, getting into scouting, doing some coaching, and all those things coming together, really leading to this moment where he was able to sign his first big leaguer, and seeing the joy and hearing the passion, especially a moment when the first big leaguer you sign gets up there and gets his first big league hit. That's something that every scout we've talked to has talked about as a huge moment for them. Or if it's a pitcher they signed, that first big league appearance, the first big league strikeout, the first big league win or save. It's a really special moment. We're very, very fortunate the scout's willing to come on and share those with us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Kenny Munoz, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.